is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. Zaporizhia. The nuclear power plants at Zaporizhia are the focus of two competing statements by warring parties in these last days. From Reuters, Russia accuses Ukraine of firing two drones at a nuclear power station in the partially occupied Ukrainian region of Zaporizhia, but said the reactor was undamaged. And then we go over to the Ukraine side. Ukrainian Nuclear Energy Agency, Energoatom, said that Russia had troops occupying the Zaporizhia nuclear power plant, and that they are using the power plant not only to store weapons, but to launch attacks against the Ukrainians across the river. These two competing statements will leave them stand, not to settle them right now. This is the Dnieper River Valley. Because Henry Sokolsky, the executive director of the Nonproliferation Policy Education Center, is here to take us to the Geneva Convention, protocol addition to the Geneva Conventions of 1949, relating to the protection of victims of international armed conflicts, dated 8 June 1977, entitled Protection of Works and Installations Containing Dangerous Forces. Henry, a very good evening to you. These two claims, one by a Ukrainian authority saying the Russians are using this as a fortress to shoot at us, and the other, the Russians claiming the Ukrainians have attacked their own nuclear power plant. There are six power plants there. It's a complex. I believe the last information I had, two are online, four are not. The Russians are saying the Ukrainians attacked us. To your understanding of the Geneva Convention, are both these allegations about war crimes? Good evening to you.
Good evening. Thank you for having me on. Maybe. The reason I say that is the convention calls on all parties to endeavor to avoid locating military they call them objectives, but, you know, bases, I guess, in the vicinity of works or installations such as nuclear electrical generating plants, which they actually specify and call out explicitly. Well, endeavor, well, you know, so, I mean, a violation. Clearly, the protocol does not want people to do what the Russians are doing or what the Russians are accusing the Ukrainians of doing, which is shooting at these things. That much is clear. Whether it's a war crime or not, even under the protocol, is a little murkier. And it gets murkier still when you see how the U.S. looks at these things. But arguably, it could be.
Well, let's go back to March, the early weeks of the war. It's now 5 months old. This story has been with us since the early days where Russia was running over the Ukrainian forces, as opposed to today. Reuters, dated March 4, the U.S. Embassy in Ukraine said that attacking a nuclear power plant is a war crime after Russia seized a Ukrainian nuclear facility. The statement on the embassy's Twitter account went farther than any U.S. characterization of Russia's actions in Ukraine since it lost its invasion on February 24th. These are early days. The war crime talk has been commonplace since then because of the allegations of depredations to civilians. But in any event, that looks definitive if the U.S. Embassy said it. Have they taken it back, Henry?
Yes, they have. When the president was asked about this, he demurred. He didn't say it clearly was. And when asked, the Pentagon spokesperson just refused to answer. And I don't think that was an accident. It's because they felt uncomfortable calling it a war crime. And the reason I think they felt uncomfortable was if you take a look at a document which is relied upon, which is called the Rules of War, I believe. Oh, it's called the Law of War Manual that the Pentagon puts out. Quite an interesting document. I encourage everyone to take a look at it if they're interested in foreign affairs. There's a section 5 in there that talks extensively about civilian targets and both civilians and civilian objects, which would include, you know, reactors it's pretty ambivalent. It comes across first emphatic that, you know, we must not use civilians or civilian objects as shields or as hostages. But then they say, well, you know, the violation of this rule isn't necessarily a violation of the law of war. And then they start putting in lots of qualifications, like, it, you know, if it isn't feasible or it isn't reasonable or practical to avoid these things, well, then, you know, you're free to go. So it's a bit murky as a letter of law issue.
What would explain why the U.S. has backed away from its original statement that this is a war crime? Those were early days, and they were organizing NATO as it is now constituted. That was not obvious in early March. Do you believe this is a political matter, that NATO has had second thoughts about using the term war crimes because we're looking for the possibility of negotiation? I'm speculating, but I'm trying to look for why you would want to climb down from a very early, clear moral case that the administration in Washington and NATO in Brussels has repeated throughout this conflict, the moral case against Russia.
Your speculation is as good as anyone's. We can add other speculations. It could be that the United States military never, ever liked the idea of being restricted by international protocols of any sort with regard to the freedom of action to target whatever they darn well please. And, you know, one can conceive of targeting plans against, let's say, a reactor in Iran, a reactor in North Korea, and reactors in China. I'm speculating, but I've got to believe targeting plans are on file for that. And I'm not sure, that said, the folks who back the protocol and back the argument about war crimes, I'm not sure they're entirely wrong. You know, it may well be a kind of dumb thing to shoot at. I mean, the comparative advantage of the United States, it could be argued, is that when, for example, they came into Europe in the Second World War, for the most part, they were seen as liberators and welcomed by the population because we played by rules that were much better and more civilized than the Nazis. Same with Japan and the Philippines. So you can go down the list. Do you want to lose that? Well, I can tell you, if you hit one of these reactors incorrectly, you can force the evacuation of, you know, literally tens of thousands and maybe even up to a million or so people. And they're not going to be terribly enthusiastic about our arrival if we choose to walk in. So, you know, I don't know about legalities, but practicalities suggest this is a little bit more complicated and difficult issue than just retaining your options and warding off any encroachment of that. Maybe these are targets that should be taken off the table of civilized military activity.
I go to Chapter 5 of the Laws of War from the Pentagon. The chapter head, I don't need to go into detail. I don't think this is ambiguous, Henry. Prohibition on using protected persons and objects to shield, favor, or impede military operations. That describes Zaporizhia, not only the plan itself, but we've had reporting, and we've talked about this from the Wall Street Journal, that the original staff is being held hostage at the plants, forced to guide new people to how to run the plants, sometimes tormented or tortured for their knowledge, not permitted to leave, kept at a ferocious pace. Now, this is some weeks past. There's no reason to believe it's improved. Those are all clear violations in war crimes. So I'm unfamiliar with this, Henry. You've been dealing with nuclear power for years. Is this unprecedented? Have we had an instance like this where some people are saying it's a war crime, and then the same people say, well, it's a judgment call?
I don't think we're in virgin territory here. Thanks to Mr. Putin, we get to discover questions we haven't bothered to address, much less answer. And I think that's what's interesting about this question. It's new. And I think the U.S. is not a signatory to the Geneva Convention for the very reason that it wants to retain, I think, the freedom of action that comes from the question of, well, but, you know, if it's impractical, unreasonable, or somehow inconvenient, if it risks our ability to win, if the costs and time and money or other resources are very high, all that's in the document, the law of war manual that the Pentagon wrote. So it's not like we're in like Flint with the protocol. We said that's a great objective, and we should do that to the extent feasible. That's it.
What is your recommendation to the Pentagon, to the Biden administration, to Congress, to clarify or to remove these prohibitions that are not being obeyed?
Well, I think, they used to have these things on the Hill when I worked up there called hearings on topics other than the mandatory budget review, which they love to do because people lobby for the money. Maybe they should go, you know, substantive and not focus on money matters here. You know, that probably won't happen. The Congress is, allergic to opening up topics it doesn't have a programmatic solution to. But I think it's worth asking questions about what our position should be. And is this really a target, given the risks that are inherent to hitting it, that we want to retain so much freedom of action? Perhaps we should say, look, we may not want to lock ourselves in legally, but we think it's a big mistake for people to target these things. And we at least as a matter of policy are not going to do it.
Do you think it's
full stop?
Do you think it's worthwhile for the U.S. to convey to Kyiv, to President Zelensky, that this allegation must be investigated and there must not be another instance of the allegation? Stop attacking nuclear power plants?
Well, boy, now you put me on point. Now I'm squirming in my chair thinking maybe I shouldn't go as far as I've argued. I think at the very least, the problem should be discussed with him and say, look, this is bad PR. But then if we put the squeeze on him in that regard, we probably have to deliver literally something to make it possible for them to work the problem of the Russian occupation better. That may mean more missiles of longer range. It may mean airplanes. I think you can't teach temperance from a bar stool and scolding people when they're in a tight place like the Ukrainians without, giving them sort of military alternatives to the ones they feel they have to take.
Henry
is not a good look either.
Henry Sikorski is the executive director of the Nonproliferation Policy Education Center. We're headed to Europe that is funding and driving much of the resupply of Ukraine in this conflict. But Europe's got a problem, and it's not only an inflation, it's called electricity. When we come back, I'm John Bash.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.